Church. We've been talking about the non-denominational nature of the Lord's Church. This morning we talked about the fact that it is truly a challenge to make sure that we are not a denomination. Just claiming that doesn't necessarily make it so. It really depends upon our concept and whether we are truly striving to not be denominational in our conception and in our practice. And so that's the challenge that we have been looking at. And tonight I'd like to make just a few more thoughts along that line as we ask this question: is there a certain designation that we as the Lord's people should use to refer to our church? Whether you want to talk about that in the sense of the universal Church of Jesus, is there some official name or official designation, or whether you want to talk about that in the sense of a local congregation of the Lord's people, is there some special name or designation that we are to use? And the reason why I bring up this question is because a lot of people have the idea that there really is some kind of special designation or official name that we need to be using. Sometimes it is a question that arises when people are talking about the sign out front. What kind of designation are we going to put on the sign? Should we have a sign? If we do, well, what's it going to say? And all the implications that result from that. And I think it is an important question. I think it's important that we look at what the Bible has to say about this. Because again, looking at this kind of question helps us to make sure that we're not being denominational in our own thinking. And so I hope we can challenge ourselves to think about these things tonight. When you look at what the Bible has to say about references to the Lord's church, just say in the universal sense, we've talked about the fact that the Bible speaks about there being one church, one universal flock of God, one universal body of people. And all the passages, the many passages that use all these descriptive terms are using just that, descriptive terms. When, for instance, Jesus talks about in Matthew 16 and verse 18, upon this rock I will build my church. He's not trying to give some set name for it or some special designation for it. He's just describing it. In John 10, when Jesus talks about his flock, he's not in the context trying to give some kind of official designation that his saints will then wear. He's just describing them. That's what they are. They are, so to speak, his flock of sheep, and they hear his voice and they follow him. And the same thing when the Bible speaks about us being the house of God or the household of God or the body of Jesus Christ, or the Jesus is the vine and we are the branches, or we're the citizens of Christ's kingdom. All those kinds of designations are just descriptions, just ways of speaking about God's people and emphasizing certain aspects about us as God's people and our relationship with God, our relationship with Jesus Christ. And so nowhere in these passages is there some sort of official designation for the universal Church of Jesus Christ. And we need to understand that. But when you look at what the Bible has to say about local congregations of the Lord's people, there are a lot of different phrases used. And so I ask the same question: why these phrases? Are these phrases being used because there is some particular designation that is officially being mandated for us here? In 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 and verse 1, when Paul begins his 1 Thessalonian letter, he addresses it in this way: Paul and Silvanus and Timothy to the church of the Thessalonians. Was that their official designation? In all their church stationery, was that the special name that they had to wear, the church of the Thessalonians? I don't think so. He's just describing them. They're that assembly of people who were serving Jesus Christ, and they were located in Thessalonica. So he refers to them as the church of the Thessalonians. In Acts 20 and verse 28, when the Apostle Paul has assembled the Ephesian elders to him at Miletus, and he's talking with them about their responsibility as overseers, he says, "Shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood." And so again, when you think about that, the term church of God, well, a lot of people use that as a designation for their congregation. Some people have used that as the name for a denomination, the Church of God. Well, of course, that wouldn't be appropriate, but is this passage teaching us some official designation that a local congregation needs to wear? And again, I would say no in the context. He's not trying to legislate some particular kind of nomenclature. He's just describing them. They're this assembly of people that belong to God. And so he describes them in that way. They were purchased by the blood of God. And as a result of that, he refers to them as this church of God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul addresses his 1 Corinthian epistle in this way. Paul, to the church of God at Corinth. And again, he's just describing them. It's not some official designation, just a description of this assembly of people who have this right relationship with God. In 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 33, he uses this descriptive phraseology. He talks about how God is a God of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. Well, are we to take that phraseology, churches of the saints, obviously talking about congregations that he refers to as comprised of saints, holy ones? Well, is that some official designation? Should we talk about our congregation and other congregations in our area as having some official kind of designation? We're the congregations, we're the churches of the saints. Well, that's not what he's trying to do. He's just describing them. They are saints. They've been set apart for God. And you see these local church organizations throughout that area. And so he talks about the fact that indeed we are churches made up of saints. That's all he's doing, is just describing them. By the same token, when you look at Romans chapter 16 and verse 4, Paul says, to whom not only do I give thanks, but also do all the churches of the Gentiles. Is he giving some official designation? If you're a congregation made up of Gentiles, you need to refer to yourselves as the Church of the Gentiles. No, he's just describing them, that these are assemblies of God's people that are throughout that Gentile world. The area where they are located is a Gentile area. And these churches, these congregations, are for the most part comprised of Gentile believers in Jesus. So it's a very apt description. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1, Paul gives these various directions. He says, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. Well, again, he's describing churches in the geographical province of Galatia. So that's the reason why he uses that kind of terminology. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19, the Apostle Paul, writing this 1 Corinthian letter from Ephesus, which is in the province of Asia. And so he says, the churches of Asia greet you. That is, here are these churches of Asia, these congregations of Asia that know that Paul is there at Ephesus and he's writing a letter to the Christians at Corinth. And they do what so often was done in the ancient world. They've said, we'll extend our greetings to those brethren in Corinth. And so Paul does that. He says, well, the churches of Asia send you their greetings. The churches of Asia greet you. He's just designating them, just describing them geographically. That's all he's doing. And if we can understand all that, well, then when you come to Romans 16 and verse 16, here Paul is writing his Roman letter at Corinth, in that Roman province of Achaia, where there were several congregations of the Lord's people. There was a congregation of the Lord's people at Corinth, at Athens, at Cenchrea, perhaps other places. And as Paul is writing the Roman brethren a letter from Corinth, he gets to the end of his letter, and again, he extends greetings from those Christians who are with him and know he's writing the Roman brethren. And they've said, extend our greetings to those brethren in Rome. And so Paul writes, all the churches of Christ greet you. Exactly the same kind of thing that we just saw in the earlier passage, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 19. Here Paul says, all the churches of Christ, meaning all the churches of Christ in this vicinity of Achaia, where I'm currently at, they all send you their greetings. When Paul uses the phraseology churches of Christ here, is that some official designation? Is that some passage of Scripture that is intended by the apostle to indicate what we're supposed to put on our sign out front? Or how we're supposed to designate ourselves that we are a congregation and we somehow are organized collectively with other congregations, and so collectively we are the churches of Christ? Clearly that's not what he's doing. In fact, that whole concept of some church in the sense of an organization or a collection of congregations is foreign to the New Testament. That's a denominational concept of which the New Testament knows nothing. And so when Paul says here, all the churches of Christ greet you, he's not giving some official name that we are to wear. And yet, brethren, how many of us have the idea in our minds and sometimes have been taught, maybe by preachers. In fact, I've seen some preachers say this and write this. In fact, use this passage and quote it as if it's some official designation that this is where God in the Bible is now telling us what our official name is to be. We're the churches of Christ. And not only is that wresting this passage from its context, it creates a concept in people's mind of the church that is an unbiblical concept. It creates a denominational kind of concept, or at the very least, it creates a concept of how God's people are organized, which is not a correct concept. The church of Jesus Christ is not some organization made up of congregations. And so that organization is known as the churches of Christ. That's a false concept. All Paul is doing in this passage, he's just describing these congregations of people in Achaia. They belong to Jesus Christ, and they send their greetings to the saints at Rome to whom Paul is writing. I hope we can understand that. I think it's important that we do understand that. We need to understand that names, though they have a helpful purpose to designate things and to help people understand about a particular group of people or a particular person, names can sometimes become a means of factionalism. And we need to understand that danger so we can be warned about that. No better way to illustrate this point than in 1 Corinthians. You recall the first four chapters of Paul's letter to the Corinthians, he's addressing this problem of the factions in the church at Corinth that are beginning to arise, and they are arising around the fact that certain ones at Corinth who had been taught by Paul and perhaps baptized by Paul's own hands, they're referring to themselves as, well, I am of Paul. And others who were taught by Apollos and perhaps baptized by Apollos, they're saying, well, I am of Apollos. And others are saying, well, I am of Cephas. And maybe, as Paul says, there are some others who were saying, I am of Christ. But the point is, you've got among the Christians at one congregation, the church at Corinth, you've got some division starting to manifest itself, at least in the way they think of themselves. And it all centers around how they are naming themselves to distinguish themselves from other Christians. I'm an of Paul Christian, or this is our of Paul group, and others are of Apollos, and others are of Cephas, but we're of Paul. And that whole concept Paul's having to refute in those first four chapters of his letter. And so he's pointing out that you need to be very, very careful about this, that you don't somehow use your nomenclature in a way that actually divides people who belong to Jesus Christ. It's one thing for a name to designate something or to say something or describe somebody or something which is true about a person or a group of people. But when that name is becoming a source of division or they are somehow viewing themselves as divided as a result of that nomenclature, you better go back and rethink your terminology and your concept when you use that kind of language. And I would suggest to you, even if the language you're using is an accurate description, it can still be used and abused, and therefore used in a wrong way to promote factionalism. And so we need to be careful about that. And certainly what you see among the denominations at large in our day is this problem of the designation you're using, the way you are denominating yourself or your group or your organization, is used to distinguish then from others. And so often this just goes hand in hand with this denominational concept of things. And so you've got denominational churches, and here's the Lutheran Church, and here's the Catholic Church, the Presbyterian or the Greek Orthodox, and so different nomenclature to designate these different church groups, these different church organizations. And some of these are expressing concepts that are far from biblical. Not all of them. Some are expressing a concept, or at least the terminology, if properly understood, would be expressing a biblical concept. And yet it's so easy, again, for these kinds of designations to just promote factionalism and somehow cause people to think that that's something which is fine and good. We need to recognize that a congregation, if they're going to designate themselves in some way, they need to make sure that it expresses a proper concept, whatever nomenclature they're going to use, and they need to make sure that they have the right concept about this. And somebody says, well, you don't have to designate yourself at all. Well, yeah, but, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have to somehow identify your group in distinction from, you know, some group down the road. And so in some way, people eventually, whether they have a sign or not, whether it's just orally speaking to people, they're going to somehow designate themselves. May not be some official nomenclature, but at least some way they're going to designate themselves. Well, okay, if you do that, all right, but make sure that you're expressing, with that nomenclature, a proper concept, not an improper concept. Should we designate ourselves in a way to honor some human leader? And again, that's what so many of the denominations have done. Here's a denomination that honors Martin Luther as supposedly the founder of that group and its theology, though, by the way, Martin Luther would be appalled at that idea if he were alive today. But should a human leader be honored? Is that the designation that we should use in order to designate our group? Is there some particular practice that should be highlighted? And should our designation, our name that we so often use, is it just to highlight that practice? So we want to emphasize baptism, so we refer to ourselves as the Baptist group or something. You see, the problems that result when you kind of highlight one particular teaching and that sort of defines us, there's just a problem with that kind of thing. Or one aspect of church organization, whether you're talking about, say, a Presbyterian church or a Methodist church, or are we going to highlight some particular aspect of that organization or the way in which things are done? And so, again, what we're really doing is just taking out one aspect, at least we're affirming it to be a teaching of Jesus, and we're highlighting that, again, to the exclusion of others. I would suggest to us that if we're thinking up some way to designate ourselves, we need to make sure that it's scriptural, and I mean by that in this sense, it's expressing a scriptural concept. And we need to make sure that we have in our minds a proper concept, that whatever designation we're using, it's not some official title, As we've said, the Bible knows nothing about some official title, some official designation. But if we're using some descriptive term as a name, well, I would suggest that these are principles we need to think about in that regard. You know, in Acts chapter 9, you read of one of the earliest ways in which Christians designated themselves. Acts 9, verse 2, the text says, Saul asked for letters. This is before Saul was a Christian. Saul asked for letters from him, the high priest, that is, to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, both men and women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. You see throughout the book of Acts several places where Luke uses that nomenclature to refer to the Lord's people. He speaks of them as the way and the path, you could render the Greek expression. In other words, those people who were on a particular path, they were following this teaching of Jesus of Nazareth. And so this was just a way of designating them. They are the way. Because they're following that way, that path that Jesus established. Even here, I don't think Luke is trying to give some kind of official designation, you know. No, it's just a way of describing them, but still, it's an interesting way that they were being described here, and it certainly was a way that would distinguish them from the Jewish sects, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and so on. These were following the way associated with Jesus of Nazareth. You know, when you go into the second and third centuries, you know, a common way that Christians would designate themselves so that other Christians would know where a Christian congregation was meeting, they would use symbols. Especially as persecution of Christians began to be rampant, sometimes you would have a group that would give a symbol like what you see here. This is a symbol of a fish, actually with loaves there too, but that was used as sort of a way of designating that there are Christians who were meeting in this place. As I said, especially in the second, third, and fourth centuries, when the persecution from the Roman government became hot and heavy, Christians wanted to allow other Christians to know that, okay, on the Lord's Day, this is where you can come. This is where we're meeting, in this person's house, in this building. And so they would very often use a symbol of a fish. And the reason why is because, well, several reasons, because some of the miracles of Jesus were associated with fish, okay, even the feeding of the 5,000 associated with this particular, the loaves and the fish. But also that term fish, the Greek word for fish, is the Greek word ichthus. And it was used as an acronym. Those letters of the Greek word ichthus were used as an acronym for these terms. The what would correspond to our I, Iesus, Jesus, the key in Greek that would designate Christos, Christ, and then Theou, meaning belonging to God or gods, Huios, the Greek word for son, and then Soter, the Greek word for Savior. And so Ichthus in Greek was an acronym for Jesus Christ, God's Son, our Savior. And so that fish symbol, to Christians who knew that special symbolism, that became that kind of terminology that they'd use in the second, third, fourth centuries very often to indicate Christians are meeting here. Come and join us here. And of course, later, as you're well aware, a symbol of a cross very often came to be used as sort of a Christian symbol in the same kind of way. When you look at the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries in our country historically, groups of people who were striving to be Christians and were striving, at least their claim, striving to be non-denominational Christians, going to the Word and seeking to restore themselves to the apostolic doctrine, in the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, there were groups who would use these kinds of designations. Some would refer to themselves as, well, we are the disciples of Christ. They'd use that terminology. And of course, the New Testament is replete with that kind of descriptive terminology. They would refer to themselves, therefore, as the disciples of Christ. Or some would refer them to themselves as a Christian church, a Christian assembly. And again, they were trying to just emphasize that we are Christians. We're trying to be Christians. We're not trying to be a Baptist or a Methodist or a Catholic or a Lutheran. We're trying to be a Christian church. And so that terminology came to be used by a lot of these different congregations. And some would use the designation Church of Christ. And again, a descriptive term in the Scriptures, but a very appropriate term that would describe the relationship of this congregation of believers to Jesus Christ. And so this terminology came to be commonly used. And again, as we talked about in this morning's lesson, our challenge, if we're going to use terminology like this, which is certainly biblical, it's certainly descriptions that certainly meet what the Bible says, our challenge, though, is to make sure that we don't use that terminology in an unbiblical way, or conceive of things in an unbiblical way, have some conception in our minds as a result of using some of this terminology to designate ourselves, that we start to conceive of ourselves in some unbiblical way, maybe in a denominational way. And the fact that we as a congregation might use, say, the name Church of Christ, and another congregation that we know of, well, they use that same designation, and maybe another one uses that same designation. Should we start conceiving of that as then indicating that, okay, all of us churches of Christ, we somehow collectively form some unity, some organization? Once we start doing that, then what have we done? We've gone into an unbiblical kind of concept of things, and the Bible knows nothing about some organization of congregations in that way. So it isn't that this terminology is somehow inherently wrong. It's inherently good terminology. But it can easily be perverted in our minds and denominationalized in our thinking. Just like so many other things, it's easy for us in our thinking to begin to even use terminology like this in a denominational sense. Got to have a sign out front. Okay? Yeah? I mean, some way. So people who want to come worship with us and worship in accordance with what we believe is the New Testament pattern of worship, well, they need to know where we're at and where we're meeting. And so, okay, here's our building, so we got to put a sign out there. All right, well, what's going to be on the sign? And I've known people, they'll have big arguments. It's got to say Church of Christ. Well, why does it have to say Church of Christ? Well, a lot of them get upset. Well, just because, well, that's our official name. You know, well, no, it's not. Well, and I recently read this article or a sermon, rather, that a preacher gave where, you know, saw some church and they decided not to have Church of Christ on their sign, and they put Christians Meet Here. And are they embarrassed to say they belong to Jesus Christ? Is that what's going on? Well, no. But that's the way some people kind of in an unbiblical way, that they're sort of conceiving of this as, well, Church of Christ is the official name and you got to use that. No, not at all. It's fine to have Church of Christ on the signs. If you want to put Christians Meet Here, or, you know, or put a fish, if people know what that means, okay, you know, fine. And I've known brethren get in arguments about whether we should have a sign, or then they argue about whether we're going to put Church of Christ on the sign, or then they argue about whether it's going to say a Church of Christ or the Church of Christ. We've got to argue about that. We're going to then get an argument, is church going to be capitalized or the lowercase? Because that's a big issue. Let's just forget the whole thing. Let's not have Church of Christ at all. But then we got to have something. Well, let's see. What can we put out there? You know, we can't say Church of God. That would make people think that we're belonging to the denomination Church of God. We can't say Assembly of God. They're going to think the wrong thing there. So, what if we put Church of Christ? Okay, let's put Church of Christ. Now, is it going to be a Church of Christ or the Church? Capital. And then we just kind of go round and round and round and round. So what's the answer to all this? Somebody says, well, let's put Christians meet here. Okay, that's good. And you know what will finally happen if this group says Christians meet here, and maybe there's another group that starts, and they say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's put Christians meet here. Another group starts, and they say, that's a really good way to say, Christians meet here. And then guess what people are going to start doing? If you're not careful, people in the world will do this, and we'll start doing it too. Yeah. You know that Christians Meet Here group? They've got several congregations in our area. And there we go. You know, somebody has taken a perfectly good designation and now perverted that in their thinking, and they got some denominational kind of concept from it. Well, so what's the answer to all of this? And somebody says, man, let's just don't have any sign and not ever let anybody know where we are. Just, they can find us. If they can't find us, it's their problem. Well, you know what the answer is, folks? Come up with some way to designate yourself that would fit with what the Scriptures are describing us to be and not create some kind of inherently wrong concept. And then, and it will always be the case, you're always going to have to, no matter what you put out there, no matter what scriptural designation you put on that sign, or if you don't have a sign, however you designate yourselves, you're always going to have to teach people. Always. You're always going to have to explain to people out there in the world what you are and what you're not. It's exactly like when you're talking to somebody and they ask you, well, what are you religiously? And you say, well, I'm a Christian. And they say, I know. But what kind of Christian? Nothing. I'm a Christian. And then they're puzzled, and then you got to explain all that to them. It's because you're using a very biblical term, but in their minds, they're thinking of that in some different way than the Bible is thinking of that. And they want to know what kind of denomination you belong to as a Christian, because that's how they're conceiving of all this. You're always going to have to teach people out there. Always. It's just the way it is. And you're always going to have to teach your own group. Because among the Lord's people, it's always going to be the case that among us, there are going to be misconceptions, because we're human beings. And, we've got young ones who are growing up and we're trying to teach them, and they've got young minds and they don't fully fathom all of this. And they hear words like denomination from the pulpit, and that big $5 word. They don't know what that means really. And so they have kind of a skewed concept as a kid growing up with that. And then sometimes that skewed concept becomes manifest when they become an adult and they start speaking using language Church of Christ in a denominational or sectarian way. And what do you have to do? You got to teach them. You just got to teach them. We always have to do that. You have new converts and, they've been converted to Jesus Christ from a denominational background. There's a lot of misconceptions they have and terminology and phraseology that they use that is maybe not in accordance with the Bible. It may be biblical, but their conception of it is not the Bible conception of it. You've got to teach them. And now they're among your group, and so you don't realize the misconception is there, but gradually it begins to manifest itself. It's always that way. And I'll tell you what else. Those of us who have been Christians for years and years and years and who ought to know better and do know better, but guess what? We're human beings too, and we're in this world, and we have a denominational world that uses terms like church and Christian and Church of Christ in unbiblical ways, and we're inundated by all that, and so guess what tends to happen? We find ourselves in our own language sometimes misusing terminology. Or we're trying to speak to our neighbor next door, and so we find ourselves sort of accommodating to his misuse of words. And sometimes we know we're doing that, so we put little quotation marks, you know, which is okay, that's good. But sometimes after you've done that a whole lot, you just drop the quotation marks, and you know, and you don't realize it. But even if you've been a Christian for years and years and years, you find yourself making statements like, well, the Church of Christ teaches, or, you know, as if somehow the Church of Christ is some body that of churches that then establishes its doctrine for its congregations. You know, we don't mean that, but we say that. It's unbiblical. We're not using language properly. And it shows a misconception, even though we should know better. Or again, as we talked about this morning, somebody says, well, I'm a Baptist. What are you? Oh, I'm Church of Christ. And we're as denominational as we can be in our language. And so, what's the answer to all this? Teaching. It's got to talk about it and teach ourselves and correct ourselves. And it's the reason why, as I said this morning, it's so hard to really be a non-denominational New Testament Christian. It's just hard. You're always having to examine yourself, always having to test yourself. And when you get frustrated by all that, you're going to pull your hair out. Realize that the Bible has been teaching us all along. It's always that way. It's a challenge. To be a Christian. It's a challenge to be a disciple of Jesus Christ and not be affected by the world around you. It's always been a challenge. It always will be a challenge. So if you find this challenging, welcome to the club. And I don't mean club in a denominational sense. I thank you so much for listening to me in these lessons. The lessons I've given in this series, I didn't announce as a series, I really believe some of the most important lessons that we need to hear because of the fact that we are living in a world that misunderstands these things. And we ourselves can so easily misunderstand these things. I appreciate some of you parents have been telling me that you've been talking with your kids at home about some of these concepts and trying to help them understand these concepts in a proper way. That's wonderful. Keep that up. And I urge all of us as parents and all of us as Christians to strive to be teaching our young people and teaching ourselves and reminding ourselves of what the Bible's talking about when it speaks of the Church of Jesus Christ. That's our challenge. Thank you for listening to me. Is there someone here tonight who needs to respond to the gospel of Jesus in some way? We sure would like to help you obey the Lord. If we can assist you, let that be known, won't you? While together we stand and sing the song.